Hi again, and welcome to Amarin's Podcast, episode 83. It's Tuesday, April 8th, 2008. My name is Arthur, and I'm a gay American now living in New Zealand. Welcome to my podcast. It's pretty much back to normal now, and so today I'm going to tell you about a few items in the news. New Zealand has become the first country in the world to sign a free trade agreement with China. What does that mean? A New Zealand professor has called for a tax on butter. And about 20% of New Zealanders favor nuclear energy. Or do they? Well, as I said, things are a bit back to normal now. And that's after my hectic week last week. And actually the week before that was pretty busy too, but for other reasons. And so what that all means is that I can podcast on a Tuesday again, and hopefully on Friday as well, but we'll see how it goes. But today I did want to tell you about a few things in the news, and then, of course, after that we'll have comments and a few bits and pieces. This week, the New Zealand government signed a free trade agreement with the government of China, and in so doing, New Zealand became the first Western country to sign such an agreement. And I had two reactions when I first heard it. My first reaction was, big deal. I'm not generally a fan of free trade agreements anyway, under the best of circumstances. And that leads into my second reaction, which was, why now? With all of the bad publicity that China was getting over its mistreatment of Tibet and suppression of civil liberties and all those kinds of things, this is a really bad time to be signing this. Well, the New Zealand government was gung-ho to do it, and I'm not quite sure what the hurry was. I know that they've been working on it for years, and what they really want is to have a free trade agreement with the U.S. However, there are a lot of issues that are preventing that, and I've spoken about them before on this podcast. A great many of them basically boil down to sort of government arrogance on the part of successive U.S. administrations, Republican and Democrat alike. So nothing much is going to happen on that anytime soon. So it sort of made sense to go with China. Now, the thing is that within a generation, China is going to be the dominant power in the Pacific. So it kind of makes sense for a small island trading nation to have good, close economic relations with that power. And so in that sense, there was probably no choice, and it's probably better to do it sooner rather than later. Now, on the larger issue of the politics of the Chinese regime, it's been argued that would be a good reason for not concluding an agreement. The New Zealand government, however, has said that by engaging with China, there's a better opportunity to bring it around, to make it think correctly, well, essentially is what they're saying. And there's probably an element of truth in that, because countries that are drawn together economically eventually start to come to better terms, we'll say. It has been said that no two countries with McDonald's in them have ever gone to war. I don't know if that's true, but that's what they say. And the main reason for the whole thing is the economic benefit to New Zealand in tariff-free trade to China. New Zealand has some of the lowest tariffs of any country in the world. It has one of the world's most open economies anyway, and we don't have high tariffs on much of anything. So there's not a whole lot new that China is going to gain from that, from the agreement, although the few tariffs that remain will be phased out. And the same is true also for New Zealand products. And it's going to start almost immediately, and fairly quickly the tariffs are going to drop on agricultural products. Now, the reason that's significant is because the United States almost never drops agricultural tariffs in any free trade agreement that it signs. And I've said before that the U.S. never signs a free trade agreement where it has to give up anything. So this makes this free trade agreement quite unusual in that it seems to be giving up something in order to get something. Now, obviously they're getting access to our market, but it's so small that can't be their only reason. They are going to be able to have preferential treatment for, I think it's 2,000 workers a year to come to New Zealand. And they can stay up to 3 years. And they get preferential treatment for things where Chinese people would normally be anyway, like cooks in a Chinese restaurant, for instance, or martial arts instructors, or things like that, traditional Chinese medicine practitioners. So it won't have a huge impact on the job market in New Zealand. And New Zealand has had a jobless rate below 4% for something like 3 years. We have among the lowest job unemployment rates in the developed world. So that's not going to be a major issue. But the government is predicting that the free trade agreement will result in a trade benefit to New Zealand. In other words, increased sales of exports in the order of more than 500 million New Zealand dollars a year, which quite frankly didn't sound like very much to me, 500 million. I mean, yeah, I know it's half a billion, but it just doesn't sound like very much. And to put it in some perspective, McDonald's spends $100 million per year, actually more than that, buying supplies from New Zealand farmers and food suppliers. So like 20% of how much they expect to gain, one company in New Zealand does now. So yeah, it's. I mean, $500 million is nothing to sneeze at, especially for a nation that's so heavily dependent on trade as New Zealand is. But I still have reservations, and I don't like free trade agreements in general because they tend to favor the bigger power at the expense of the smaller one. But well, I've got an open mind, and besides, the deal is done. There's nothing I can do about it now anyway. But I don't know what to make of this of this whole thing of China signing an agreement first with New Zealand of all countries. I mean, let's be real here. New Zealand is a speck on the map. There are plenty of other countries you'd think that they would have been keener to do business with, except that New Zealand has always had an independent mind in international affairs and hasn't jumped on the bandwagon to roundly criticize China at every opportunity. So maybe they sort of like that independent streak in us and the fact that New Zealand tends not to, I don't know, do what the U.S. tells it to do all the time. I don't know. I have no idea what's behind it. But it is certainly a significant news item. Now, indirectly related to that, because it's dealing with agriculture, a New Zealand professor has called for a tax on butter, which he calls pure natural poison. Now, of course, this won't happen. Most of New Zealand's foreign exchange is earned from the backs of cows or sheep. So it just there's no way that they're going to put a tax on butter. But he has an interesting point. He points out that, yes, butter does come from natural sources. It's derived from milk. But they take all the goodness out. There's no calcium. There's no protein. All that's left is saturated fat. And that makes it bad. And he says, you put a tax on cigarettes and you put a tax on alcohol. Why isn't there a tax on butter? And that it's an interesting idea. And he also has pointed out that cigarettes are essentially natural, too, because they're just a dried plant that people are smoking. But it's not going to happen because it's just too important to New Zealand economy. But as this whole thing was being discussed, one of the things I thought was really interesting about it is that apparently New Zealand has among the world's highest per capita consumption of butter. In other words, the average New Zealander eats more butter than the average person in any other country, which I find astounding, except that I suppose people grew up with it. I mean, in a lot of traditional meals, you would find bread and butter on the table. And of course, nowadays, the butter has largely been replaced with margarine, but in the old days, it was butter because it was, I've forgotten the year. I think it was 1972. Up until 1972, it was illegal to buy margarine in New Zealand because of the impact on dairy farming, potentially. And early on, you could only buy margarine at a chemist, a pharmacist. And you may have even needed a prescription. I'm not positive about that part. But people I know talk to me about having to go to a chemist to get margarine, which is just absolutely absurd if you stop to think about it. Except that I don't personally remember this, but I remember my mother telling me that we used to, our family vacations were camping in Wisconsin, because as a poor preacher, he didn't have the money for a fancy vacation, so that's what we used to do. And actually, as a kid, I thought it was great. I thought it was the best thing. But when we would go to Wisconsin, my mother wanted margarine, and they didn't sell it. They only sold butter. However, you could go into a store, and you could get the stuff they called oleo, which was white. And it had a little capsule of yellow food coloring, and it was sold in a plastic bag. And you broke the capsule of yellow food coloring and mixed it all together to make it yellow in color. So you could buy it in Wisconsin, but they made it unappealing, I guess, with an idea of trying to discourage people from buying it from a state that was, at the time anyway, as dependent on dairying as New Zealand is today. But that was then, this is now, and of course that's not the case in either Wisconsin or New Zealand. Both countries have moved on. But I thought it was an interesting thing because about this whole butter being pure natural poison, because it is certainly true. We don't use much butter in our house. We just use a very little every now and again for cooking or baking. But beyond that, we just don't use butter. And I don't know, maybe that's as it should be. But also in the news, there was a survey that apparently claimed that 20% of New Zealanders, roughly a fifth, would back nuclear energy. Now, some of the media outlets I thought were pretty irresponsible in reporting this because they said, suspiciously, I think, that this amounted to an increase in support. Now, what they based that on is somebody saying that he doubted that several years ago they would have gotten 3 or 4% in favor. Well, that's not the same thing as actually having a statistic to back it up. And as it happens, there is a relevant statistic. Because in September of last year, a poll claimed that 36% of New Zealanders were in favor of building nuclear power plants. So if that was true, that means that the support for nuclear power has actually declined in the past few months. Because at that time, 60% were against it. And now, nearly 80% of New Zealanders in this poll had wind power as their favorite option. Apparently, New Zealand is among the best places in the world for wind power. We have quite a few wind power plants, and they're building more all the time. Wind farms, I guess you call them. And that is a favorite option. And up until, I think it was the 80s, all of New Zealand's power came from renewable sources, primarily hydro and some geothermal. And now it's down to around 70-odd percent is from sustainable sources, wind, hydro, and geothermal, and the rest comes from fossil fuels. It's an issue for New Zealand just as much as it is for any other country, but I can assure you that nuclear energy will not be one of the options that is chosen. It's too expensive. There isn't the population base to even justify that sort of expense. And the fact is that it's estimated that uranium is going to run out in 60 years anyway. So you'd be investing in all this for virtually nothing. And one final item from the news today. I had to fill up the car with petrol because the little light came on. It was on vapors practically. And I paid $1.79.9 per liter. And I worked out that that works out to $5.34 U.S. cents per U.S. gallon. $5.34 per gallon, basically. And if you ever want to know, I don't know why you would, but if you ever wanted to know how to figure out prices quickly on the fly, you can Google it. All you have to do, like in this case, for instance, I put 1.799 NZD per liter in USD per gallon, and then it gives me the figures. I can do it the other way around, too. Convert price in U.S. dollars per U.S. gallon in New Zealand dollars per liter. And you can do that with almost anything else, too. You can say, you can pick a price and say 100 USD in NZD, and it will give you the equivalent amount. There's a lot of other things you can do with Google like that. Although nowadays I tend to use my iMac because on the dashboard I have a currency converter built in. But that's only for converting specific prices. If I want to do, in this case, volume and price, then I just Google it because it's so much easier. But anyway, this is a little fun fact to know until 5.34 per U.S. gallon. But now I'm going to go on to comments. And first is a card, actually, that I received from Nancy in Japan. And I hadn't been checking my P.O. box at the time that I recorded last, so I didn't know it was there. But it has an interesting inscription. It says, "Hi, Arthur," and this is the quote, "It is well to remember that there are five reasons for drinking: the arrival of a friend, one's present or future thirst, the excellence of the wine, or any other reason." It's apparently a Latin saying, and I can't quite read what she's got after that. But anyway, she says, "One's first anniversary falls into that category. Well done. Best wishes, Nancy." Thank you for that, Nancy. Thank you very much. And I heartily agree. I think more often than not, I'm on the fifth reason, any other reason, when it comes to drinking. But now, for the next comment, I'm going, also for the anniversary episode, I'm going over to the Podomatic site. And just waiting for that to come up. There we go. And it's from John Q. Public, who said, "Add my congratulations to those who want to celebrate your podiversary. I've been with you from the beginning and enjoy the diversity of topics and the point of view of someone who has some distance from the follies of America, and yet can understand how we got to where we are. Best to you and the family." And I said, "Thanks. I appreciate your listening and support." And John has been very supportive since the beginning, and I certainly value that. I have a number of listeners I know who have been with me since the beginning. I don't hear from all of them. In fact, I don't hear from many of them. But I know that there are many listeners out there. And also, I've been getting many new listeners. Welcome, by the way. And some have been going back and downloading my older episodes, which is great. And every once in a while, I will have a day where I'll have like three or four people downloading older episodes. So they're obviously stumbling across me somewhere. I don't know where necessarily. I recently signed up with a New Zealand, social networking site called Kiwi Pulse. And they have a section in there for New Zealand podcasters. And there's three of us signed up. And the other two do music podcasts. One is the New Zealand branch of Insomnia Radio, if you've heard of them. And the other is a New Zealand music podcast. I haven't had any direct dealings with them. And I still haven't met any other podcasters in this part of the world, although I know there must be some. I do know that podcasting just does not seem to be a very big deal in New Zealand. Having said that, however, I have made it onto the featured page of Personal Journal Podcasts in iTunes New Zealand Store, which I've posted on my blog. And, I mean, I think that's fantastic because, I mean, this is a country I live in. I would like to be there. But I still don't have any reviews in the New Zealand iTunes Store. I have them in Australia, in Germany, and in the U.S. I haven't checked recently, but I think that's it. Although I did check recently, and I was up to 28 five-star reviews in iTunes USA. And I would tell you who the most recent ones are, but I've forgotten. And I don't want to log into that because it'll probably screw things up. But thank you, all of you who have reviewed, and I will eventually, I'm sure, acknowledge you by name. But back to the comments. This is on episode 82, Jake Day. And first up was Big Fatty, who said, "Clearly I am too old to get the Sesame Street reference." And I said, "Actually, I shouldn't know it either. I was referring obliquely to Mr. Snuffleupagus, sort of a big furry elephant-like thing that at first only a big bird could see. He used to say, 'Hello, bird.' The only reason that I know that is that a friend of mine, my age, mind you, watched Sesame Street at the time. We were teenagers then. And for some reason, that's just always stuck in my head. And so when I heard Kenton Stufflebeam, that's the first thing that popped into my head. I know, it's a weird association, but there you go. And next up was Frank, who said, "Thanks for playing the transcription of the earliest known recording. I'd read about it and had wondered if they had been able to play it back. It sounds like it may be a Precambrian Skype-style recording, possibly a response to a Craigslist post for a help wanted ad for a longbowman." And I said, "Is that how you say it? Longbowman? Longbowman? Maybe I said longbowman." Anyway, I said, "I think you're right about the recording, except that I think it was probably an eBay ad for a vintner." Next up, oddly enough, was Archer, who said, "Is that a new opening to your podcast? I don't remember that opening. Happy birthday to Jake. Funny wombat story. Oh my gosh, Arthur, can you tell I'm taking notes as I listen? When you played that oldest recording, I cracked up. That was so funny. I don't expect things like that from you. It surprised me and gave me a great laugh. Your feed issues are a pain in the butt. You might just have to start over and submit a new feed and to all the different places it's listed. Good luck with that." And I said, "The opening is adapted from the one I made up for my anniversary episode. It's sort of temporary and a way to avoid either the overused Apple loops, copyright music, and PodSafe 2. I play all the instruments on the opening, apart from the playing, which sounds more impressive than reality. I used a hunt and peck method on the keyboard and used GarageBand to make it different. Jake says thank you. And, oh, you may hear the odd bit of fun sometimes, now that I'm in my second year. Glad you enjoyed it." And actually, I realized after I did that I've only done joke things like that twice, really. And the first time was a mashup I did of Archer, of an Archer group show about sex. And then there was this one. And so Archer was the victim both times. But the thing, I had a thought process behind it, actually. I wanted to have one of the podcasters who's been around for a while, and I could have used Madge, except I don't listen to Madge anymore, so that wasn't going to work. And I know Archer better than the others anyway, so I thought, nah, I can get away with using Archer like that again. But I do plan to do some more fun things in the year ahead. I've talked in the past about some of the things I used to do, and days when I only had a tape recorder. And you're welcome to go back and check this somewhere in the archives. I don't know where. I don't know what episode it was. But the point basically is that I used to have a bit of fun sometimes with the microphone, and I'm hoping to do more of that in the year ahead, in years ahead, shall we say. But that's really what I meant by that. But the thing about the wombat story is that at the time, I hadn't heard it or seen it anywhere else. But since then, it seems like it's everywhere. I saw it on a blog somewhere. I can't remember where. Oh, it was one of my listeners, one of my friends on MySpace, had a link to it. And so I saw it there. And it was actually posted on her blog before I podcasted. And of course, I was behind in listening to Auntie Vera Charles, and I hadn't realized that he'd already talked about it on his podcast. And I should actually say that I messed up the name last time. The name of the podcast is Vera Speaks for Real with your Auntie Vera Charles. Anyway, I have finally added a link to my blog on a parade of podcasts. So you can, if you want to go check it out for yourself, that's where you'll find the podcast. But I mean, that sort of thing is bound to happen. And if I was able to record on my normal schedule, I probably wouldn't be running into this where things get left too late. But that is it for this week. Already? Yes, already. Do feel free to leave a comment on my blog, which is at amrins.com, or you can send an email to me at arthur at amrins.com. Or you can ring my U.S. listener line on 206-339-8413. And as it happens, I still have a couple of weeks before I'll have to ring it myself in order to avoid losing the line, so you've got plenty of time to leave a message. I think maybe that's a bit more effective extortion than begging people to leave a comment, but we'll see. And I'm not restricting it only to just listeners. Podcasters can ring too, unlike certain other shows this week. But that's it this week. Oh, this week, instead of my normal outro, I'm playing a PodSafe music artist. I heard about this over on gayandzed.com in a post about gay theme music or music by bands with gay people in it. They're a little bit outside of the mainstream. And this has been on the PodSafe Music Network for a while now. And the group is called Block Party. And the song is called I Still Remember. And what it's about, the lead singer is of doesn't talk about his sexuality. But what the song is about is a schoolboy who had a crush on another schoolboy and regrets not having done anything about it. So it makes it kind of interesting, I think. So if you like to listen, you can go all the way through. If you really can't be bothered listening to music, then there's nothing after the song. So that will be it for today. But do leave a comment, and I will talk to you again on Friday, I hope. Bye.